We usually don't use a microphone. I usually don't have one of those unless it's an English competition and maybe we have to speak in front of 300 students or something. But it's a little bit disorganized in my classes because I never know what I'm going to have to do exactly. We never know if the blackboard's going to be there in a class. We never know if the door's going to be locked. We never know if the students are going to come to the right classroom. So you just have to sort of be flexible. Anyhow, how many of you have been to China? I need to get an idea here. Wow, good. How many of you are U.S. citizens? Okay, good. How many of you are graduated from college? Yeah, I saw that. Okay. Some of you aren't quite that old yet. How old do you think I am? 21. Good guess. Very good guess. Did you say 21?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Another guess. Don't tell them that. 37. Getting closer. Yes, but very good guess. 40. Getting closer, but also not a bad guess. 100. You're about halfway there, so we'll give it to you. You got 51. 51. I've been in China 20-some years. First went in 1989. Does that ring a bell for anybody?
No.
No, you guys don't know. But some people who maybe have watched the news heard that there was a Tiananmen Square incident in 1989. And my students were involved in that in Shanghai. So we went right after. A lot of agencies, they said, nope, we're not sending people to China. We're just going to wait a while. But we said, we'll go. And so we had a few people drop out, but most of the teachers went. And we had students that were watched. They were put on the blacklist because they helped to block the streets in Shanghai with some of the buses. And maybe they protested a little bit too much. So they got their names put on a blacklist. So when you want to get a job, you'll check the list. What's your name?
I don't know.
There he is. Nope, sorry, you can't get a job today. Hey. They'll put you on a blacklist and you can't get a job. Eventually, though, about 10, 15 years later, I think they got rid of the list, I think. But my students found jobs, so it wasn't too serious. But you can have things happen like that anywhere in the world, I guess. You can have disasters and problems, right, in your life, in your relationships. And that's what we want to talk about today a little bit. I'm going to tell you about China, and then we're going to get into maybe some Bible verses about relationships and God's love. Oh, God's love. We know He loves us, right? But wait, it's a secret. You'll find out. Okay, first of all, in China, I've been in China a long time. I first went to Shanghai. Anybody from Shanghai background?
My teacher.
Yeah, you got a teacher. Anybody else? Do you know somebody from Shanghai? Okay, good. Yeah, we're getting closer. That's a big city there, isn't it? It's like a monstrous city with 17 million or something like that. But we were there for several years. Then we moved to Tianjin. Tianjin, we moved there because they welcomed families that had kids. Our kids were young, like 1 and 3, something like that, maybe a little bit older. But they were young, and the college said, yeah, come on over. And you can see, I got a little golden medal over there from when the Tianjin University was 150 years old?
100.
Just 100, okay. So when they were 100 years old, and we were there for that celebration. And we were there in Tianjin University when China had its birthday, its big 50th birthday. They took us all to Beijing. We went to Tiananmen Square, near Tiananmen Square, and then there's like the People's Congress or something over there. They had a big banquet hall, and they welcomed us all there, a lot of the foreign teachers, and they celebrated that with us. They let us come. I think the Chinese people are very relational, and they just love to have teachers. They love to have you come and visit. They love having students who aren't graduated yet. I think you might even be able to be in high school to come and teach during the summer program, at least with our organization. And you can, for 3 weeks, teach Chinese high school students or college students for the summer.
And then you can learn some Chinese, a little bit of the culture. But there's brochures and stuff over there if you want, if you're interested, or you think maybe in 5 years I'll be interested. Okay? So grab whatever literature is over there. Okay? I won't take it back. I'll leave it here. And there's also some souvenirs, because after Tianjin, we move to another province. Does anybody know what province we are in?
I don't know.
Yeah. If you pray, you might have prayed for us in some of the mission prayer times. We're down in the southern provinces. You know any provinces there? Guangdong, yeah, you know a province. Great. But we're not there. We're a little farther west. We're in Yunnan province. And, of course, I don't think it will show up yet, right? No.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're down.
Down here, right? Yeah,
yep.
Down there. We used to be over here, and then we were up there, and then
it was disappeared. But so we've been in around Kunming in Yunnan Province for about 8 years now, and we moved there because they had a international school. So our kids, they went to international school, and so they spoke English. Okay, so it's not too scary being over in China. You can find some foreigners. We went there also because they had a keyword. They had a dentist. Yeah, my son needed some. He had some, his teeth were a little different places. So they had a dentist with some Western background. So I thought, okay, I feel safe, God. I think we can come here. But we also moved there for one other reason. It was for God's direction, of course, but my wife has always wanted to have a home, and it's cheaper in the southern provinces, just like it is here in the U.S., right? Housing is cheaper here. So the Lord blessed us with a house that we could, sort of our retirement, maybe if we ever retire. But if we have to, we can sell that and then come back here. But we have our own place. If you come and visit us, we'll put you up there. We call it Haven. Haven is like a restful place. It's like heaven. So we go there, and we can get away from the college students, or maybe get away from just the campus life. It's in a community. So it's up on the 10th floor, so we get a good view of our little park. Our city, we are surrounded by three ring roads. We're outside of the third ring road. And then there's mountains all around the city. Okay. So in 1 hour, I can get to the top of a mountain and just look over a city and pray over the city and our students. I teach, though, at a different college campus. Our college has moved about an hour bus ride away. So I hop on the bus. Hopefully the schedule's set so I can go with my wife, sleep on her shoulder. And we get to the school, and classes start at what time? In the morning? What time in the morning do you think?
Really early.
Six? No, too early. I'm not out of bed yet.
8:30.
Yeah, 8:30. So we have time to get a little breakfast either on that campus, or I get some fruit. And we got lots of good fruit in the southern provinces. So seasonal fruits, you get all sorts of yang mei. Have you heard of yang mei? Wax berries is my new favorite fruit. God was just so creative to make these big, huge cherry-shaped things with a little seed in the middle, and they're juicy, and they taste a little bit like raspberry and cherry put together. And if you haven't been to taste some of those southern fruits in China, try. See how great God is on being creative like that. Well, we have classes then at 8:30, and usually goes to about almost 12. We'll go to lunch. Maybe rest in the room that they give us on that other campus. And then we catch a bus about 1 o'clock back to our main campus. And there's a few college students there, but I don't teach there anymore. So we get an hour bus ride, an hour there, and an hour back every day. Now, how many of you do you have to ride a bus to school?
Oh.
Anybody? Okay, one. And what do you do on the bus? Yeah, I do that sometimes too. What else can you do on the bus? You can do your homework. Sometimes I prep my lessons, but usually not. My wife might prep lessons. She does it at the last minute. And what else can you do? You read, right? Well, maybe that's what you're doing on the homework. You can read on the bus, and I'll be reading. Sometimes I just read fun stuff. That way, if I'm not sitting next to Carolyn and I'm on the bus by myself, you know, I can attract attention. And there's all sorts of ways to do that. I just brought this up because this is a track I made called Fu, A Chinese Witness. And I haven't printed up too many of them yet, but it shows how the Chinese characters really give the gospel message or show that they may have some background information in the early Chinese writing system about biblical times. And you've probably read some of that stuff, right? All of those good books. Anyhow, you can see the word Fu, right? You got the God character. Maybe you don't know, but I know. You got the God character. You got the one person. Okay, it's probably in the garden there. And that's like a blessing. Wow, why would that be the word for blessing? Okay, well, God's sort of got the insight on that. You read your Bible a little bit and you can find out, right? So anyhow, one day I was reading a magazine or a book, small book, on Islam and how Muhammad in his last days was seeking God or maybe even confessed to believe in God. And I'm reading through this, and another Chinese teacher looked over. He said, "Hey, can I read that?" I said, "Yeah, I'm just about done. I'll give it to you." So I gave him that, but it was a testimony on how a lot of Muslim beliefs have some biblical basis and some truth in them. You can find truth there. But I use tracts a lot of times when I'm meeting people who aren't connected to my college. So if your Chinese isn't too good, my Chinese is Mama Hu Hu. I only studied Yang Nian Zai Shi Fan Da Shui, Shanghai Shi Da, 2 years in college. So I'm about like a second grade level, but hanging around some of the Chinese people, you pick up things like Niao Bu. You know what that is, right?
No.
Well, your parents probably used that on you when you were very little. In China, they don't. They just use the split pants. Park alongside the road, and you don't need a niaobu. But there's words that you just pick up. Kung kung wawa. You know what a kung kung wawa is, right?
No.
Yeah, you hit little speed bumps in your life or little potholes, and that's a kung kung wawa. So sometimes God will give us those in our spiritual life to help us to grow, like kung kung wawa, USB corrupted. Can't use any of your pictures. I was going to show you pictures, but maybe you're a audio learning group here today, right? Possibly. So, anyhow, so we took a look at that foo. I do want you to take a look a little bit later over at the table, and you can see just some examples of opportunities to serve in China. You don't have to be an English teacher. You can be a chemistry teacher. We have a chemistry teacher with ERC that's been there like 20 years, as long as we have, or maybe 15. You could teach religious studies. They're looking for pastors to teach some religious courses in Beijing. A lot of opportunities, a whole list. But whatever you're interested in, maybe someday, before you get grounded in a job here in the U.S., maybe you can take a year or 2 years and teach in China. Learn a little bit about people on the other side of the world, and live there and see people and get to love them. I may give you a time for question and answers at the end, but first let's, how much time do we go to? To 11? Okay, so we don't have much time. I want to, a few more things on how we share the gospel. We live life with people. In the Bible study class, they call it friendship evangelism. Well, it's just living with people, living with a bicycle repairman that you visit every time you get a flat tire, and talking to him. What does your daughter do? Oh, maybe she'd like to study English at this Christian institute over here that some other foreigners are leading. You make connections. We invite students over for dinner, for games. We go to their homes, we fix meals together, go to the cafeteria with them, and you meet them, and you love them, and just share life with them. I go hiking up in the mountains with my students. During the holidays, they'll have like a maybe a 3-day off. Some of people who live close to college go back home, right? It's like Thanksgiving here. Some people live too far away. You can't go back home. So we invite whoever wants to go hiking with Mr. Ramsey up the mountain, meet me here tomorrow. And I may have 6 or 7 students, and I'll bring my little tracks with me, and we'll have a picnic up in the mountain, and we'll read some of those and talk about things, and you have a chance to live your life and love people just like anybody can do, right? So those are my fun experiences. I used to play basketball with them, but when you're 51 and you set a pick and somebody runs into you, your ribs get a little sore after a while. And I jammed 2 toes last year, and both my big toenails fell off. Okay, so I play slower now. I don't want to play slower, but that's what happens when you get older, I guess. All right, are you ready for love?
I don't know.
All right, I think you are. I'm going to start off, and all my notes that were on the PowerPoint came from this book. It's called Normal Christianity. Have you heard of it? Anybody heard of it?
Nope.
Go online, look at Normal Christianity. Better yet, check out Jonathan Welton. He's got a lot of good understanding the whole Bible. You know, you can put it in one book. And it's a good Bible study for anybody. I'm reading through it, or I've read through it now. But Normal Christianity. Can you tell me what is Normal Christianity? Are you talking about like the average Christian?
Maybe.
You know, like this guy, he's a Billy Graham, and this guy, he's an English teacher, and you know, is it an average of what Christianity should be, or
maybe
normal Christianity? It's like you think you should be praying for revival in America. We hear this. I don't know about this church. This looks like it's been revived quite a bit, but you have a new building over there, and you have more people coming, and you're inviting your friends, and you know, we pray for revival in America. Does America need revival prayer?
Yes.
It does. Let me see here. I had a note. Unlike inhibitions, there is no call for revival found anywhere in Scripture. And I'm thinking, all right, let's see. Where is there a call for revival in the Bible?
Page 21.
What's the name of the book? Read for me.
Normal
Christianity. There's no revival. We don't need to pray for revival. We need to be praying that we'll be normal Christians. What do normal Christians do?
Right.
You read the Bible and you find out what normal Christians do. What did the apostles do? What did all the early Christians do? Okay. One thing that's caught my attention is just praying for people. When I met we stopped at a hotel in Alabama, and an older man walked up to me and says, "Hello." You know, they're just so friendly down here in the South. Everyone say hello, but they say, "Hello, how you doing? Where are you from? You know, what are you doing here?" He says, "I'm just going out to shoot pool." And I told him, "Oh, I'm an English teacher here in China, and we're coming over here to drop off my daughter to Stanford University." So we dropped her off, and we're sort of a little teary. He said, "Oh, okay, well, that's a real good school. I know people, our church supports that and stuff." And he was telling me about his divorce. And I said, "Hey, you know, I'm a normal Christian. I'm thinking in my heart, I should pray for you." And so I just stopped. We prayed for him. But we need to be active Christians, I think, like people in the New Testament. Let's go through a few verses here, and then we'll see what we got. Okay, I marked a whole bunch, and they were in order up on the slideshow, but that's all right. How great, this is it, 1 John 3:1. 1 John 3:1. Nowadays, when I go ride my bicycle to church, I don't bring my Bible anymore. I bring 50 Bibles, all different translations and versions. That's so convenient.
We need more Bibles.
No, we don't. We just need one. 1 John 3:1, part A, I guess. How great is the love the Father has lavished on us that we should be called the children of God. If you're a Christian, How great is that love, is the love that the Father has lavished on us. And I guess the Greek also comes out. That's a past tense. God's already given us His love. And what happens when we receive that love? That we should be called also past tense, called the children of God. You, if you're a Christian, you're a child of God. You're His kid. You're His son. You're His daughter. He's lavished all that love upon you. We have that love, and that love comes from the Father. All we have to do, you don't have to do anything. Sometimes we think, oh, how can I be better at this or a better Christian? I need to pray more. Maybe God will love me more if I go to church more often or go and do everything my parents tell me to do. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a murderer, if you're like Paul the Apostle and done all those bad things. He's already lavished His love on you. You can't do anything to change the amount of love that God has for you. And that's amazing. Okay? He's going to love you if you mess up, if you disobey your parents, if you choose a different college than what they want you to go to, or if you date somebody that, if you dye your hair purple, doesn't matter. God's going to love you unconditionally. Our job? Stick out your hand and say, God, I want your love. And He'll do that. He's lavished that on you, that we can be His children. And a normal Christian is just living out that love. Now, we see a lot of ways to do that in the Bible. So you got, like, the New Testament, I think it's got 600 or maybe 1,020 some, you know, Bible commands. You're not commanded to do this or that or have communion or get baptized to go to heaven. You know, to be a Christian, you just open up your hand and you receive that love. And anyhow, I think it's a lot simpler than we believe sometimes. Anyhow, let me see if I can find a few other verses. This is my PowerPoint. Jesus directed His disciples to use that love. He's given all that love to His disciples. Then He directs His disciples to do the same thing. And in John 15:12, there, what does He say? He says, "My command is this, love each other as I have loved you." John 15:12. Love each other as I have loved you. You know, earlier in the Bible story, we hear this rich young ruler, he comes up and says, "Oh, Jesus, what's the greatest commandment? I know what that is. It's love your Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." Okay, that was the pinnacle of the Old Testament, the Old Covenant of the Law and the Prophets. Okay, now Jesus, this is the first commandment that Jesus ever gives us. See, my command is this, love each other as I have loved you. Not as you love your brother or sister. Now that's good, but some days I don't feel like loving some people. Okay, he ran over my toe on his bicycle yesterday. He splashed me driving his car while I was riding my scooter in the rainstorm. Okay, or it could be anything. I'm not going to love these Chinese people because, no, you love as I have loved you. Okay, how did Jesus love us? And that's how I got love. And I can receive that love from Him and let that flow out to everybody else that I meet, whether it's a guy at the parking lot or, you know, some of you. So, as a Christian, our job is to be lovers and to love people wherever we go. You know, as a Christian, we should be the most loving, most attractive people in the world. And people should see us and say, "Hey, I wanna sell everything and follow you, or I want what you got." And anyhow. That's an exercise in love and receiving it from God. So love as He's loved you. We'll let you go at that. You get the PowerPoint next time, maybe. God bless.